Welcome to our second presentation for Chapter 11, where we spend some time taking a look at the major investment alternatives. Now, folks, I want you to just relax. Don't fret. You've heard so much about many of these different investments, and yet much of it is overhyped, oversold, just too complicated, too detailed. We're going to take a view from an airplane, a jetliner, 35,000 feet in the air, looking down upon the investment landscape. We will then cruise on down and take a closer look at each. And, of course, in Business 123, Introduction to Investments, we spend the entire semester dealing with all of them. So let's start on slide 13. The first investment alternative we have is stocks. Now, you've heard tremendous amounts of information, much of it sensational and a very little investment, very little useful investment advice for the vast majority of people. But stocks are one of the best long-term investments that you can make, because you are an owner when you invest in stocks. You are part owner of a publicly traded corporation, big companies. So you can participate in the success of these companies, or the lack of success of these companies, which is to say that stocks are volatile. You like that word, volatile? It means I lost my shirt. when you ask somebody, how's that stock you bought? Oh, it's been volatile. What does that mean? It means they lost a lot of money, okay, folks? It's a euphemism for you can lose a lot of money. But if we take a long-term perspective, we find that stocks have done very well for investors over the long term. Now, there's some big ifs here. They have to be patient. They have to be prudent. They can't panic when the market tanks, which it's going to do from time to time. If you can control your emotions, you don't chase after stocks when they're going up and run away when they're going down, you should do well over the long term. Why? Because stocks give us two wonderful things. They give us capital gains, and those are the things that people think about. You bought it at 10 bucks, you sell it at 12 or 20 or whatever. Means the company has done well, they've invested in new products, new markets, the economy has grown as a whole. But the other wonderful thing that stocks give us are dividends. Dividends are distributions of the earnings to the shareholders. They are not mandatory. A company may or may not distribute money to its shareholders in the form of dividends. Now, some companies don't pay any dividends. These are the companies that are growing and they need that money to grow. Some companies have paid dividends for over 100 years, such as General Electric and Johnson & Johnson. Exactly. But notice, the dividends nor the capital gains are mandatory. The company stock does not have to go up, nor do they have to pay you any money. And for that reason, stocks are very risky, very volatile. But what can we expect over the long term? Well, if you go back in time in modern financial history, and there's a reason why we often use the 1910s, 1920s for this reason, for historical purposes, but you can go back further. It turns out that stocks have done very well for us, 8, 9, 10%, if we have a long-term perspective. Now, in any one year, is it 8, 9, 10%? Usually not. No, it's 12, 22, minus 17, 4. The variance, the standard deviation, is very large. And we discussed this in detail in the Business 123 class. So when we invest in stocks, we need to take a long-term perspective. The next category are bonds. Now, that's a bad name. Bonds really are loans. But people get stuck up on this idea of bonds. You mean like a savings bond? Well, sort of, but not the same. No, bonds are loans to corporations, state and local municipalities, such as school districts and cities and water authorities and bridge authorities, and the federal government, treasuries. The entity that sells the bond is actually borrowing money, and you as an investor, investors all around the world, can lend your money to these entities, corporations, state and local governments, federal government, and they promise to pay you back the principal and interest, just as if you were to go to a bank and borrow money. The bank is going to say, okay, you know, we'll run a credit check. What do you have as collateral? This is how much we're going to charge you in interest, and this is how long it's going to take you to pay back the principal. So it turns out that bonds are far less volatile than stocks. Because do most people pay their bills, pay their loans off? Yes, most people make their mortgage payments, car payments, credit card payments. Now, there are problems, right? It's not guaranteed. The person could run and hide in the world of retail lending. And the same thing is true for corporations, municipalities, the federal government. But far less of a problem. Far less of a problem. So we find that bonds are far less volatile, far less risky than stocks. But there is some risk involved, and we'll discuss that in the next presentation where we concentrate on bonds. It turns out there's a rating system, just as there's a rating system for you and I, for you and me, for our credit check, for our credit report, for our credit rating. There are rating agencies and entities that rate the bonds and tell you, the potential investor, what they believe, no guarantees, the bond is going, how it's going to do, how it's going to perform. Over the long term, bonds have returned 4, 5, 6, 7, 8%. There's a wide spectrum of risk versus return. Right now, they are returning very low rates of return, very low interest rates. And we will discuss the relationship of bond prices and interest rates in detail in the next presentation. So for investors that are frightened by stocks, or they have a shorter term horizon, 2, 3, 4 years, bonds can be a good alternative. Of course, there's nothing to stop you from buying some stocks and some bonds, and we'll discuss those strategies as we go along. The third alternative is what we often refer to as simply cash. Now, it's not cash. A better term are short-term investments. These investments are savings accounts, certificates of deposits, money markets. They are either guaranteed or pretty darn close to being guaranteed. And so we find that we get safety of principal. We know we're going to get our money back. Where with a stock and a bond, you never know. Bonds, normally, but every once in a while, yeah, very rare, but it happens. And so if we're going to lend our money to the bank or other entity that looks like a bank, a credit union, a money market mutual fund, we're expecting to make sure we want our principal returned. We want return of our principal. What kind of return are we going to get on our principal? Well, not high. Not over the long term, these things have returned 2 to 5%. Right now, as you saw in Chapter 4, what are they returning? 0.1, if you're lucky, 0.01 sometimes. So these numbers that are on this slide are over 50, 100 years, not over the last few years where interest rates have been incredibly low. But if you need your money in the short term, where are you going to? Right. You can't put it in the stock market, folks. It could drop 20% overnight. It's done it in the past. It'll do it in the future. We know that these happen. We don't know when. If you knew when they were going to happen, you could make a fortune. But you don't. And so if you need this money in 3 months, 6 months, a year, where has it got to go? Right. In the bank, in the credit union, it's got to be safe. Got it? But as we discussed in the previous presentation, you don't want to hold your money here for the long term because you're losing to inflation. You want to at least match inflation and better yet, beat inflation. And that's where stocks and bonds come in. Now, you notice that the first three and the fifth option are bold. Why? Because these are the investment options I want you to concentrate on. The ones that are not bold, I think, in my humble opinion, they ain't for you. They ain't for me. I certainly wouldn't buy them. Middle class, lower middle, even the upper middle class, most of these things are just, they're not something you want to play with. And the first one is annuities. Annuities have this tremendous tempting feature that the insurance company dangles in front of you. You can't outlive your income. Okay, what's the catch? There's always a catch. Well, you might have noticed back in Chapter 10, that's where the book introduced annuities. And they really don't belong there. I know why the book put them there. They put them there because when the beneficiary is told they're going to get the beneficiary of a $100,000 or $500,000 life insurance policy because somebody's died in a car crash or whatever, the insurance company certainly doesn't want to pay them $500,000, so they want them to get to buy an annuity. And what you do is you basically give your money to the life insurance company, and the life insurance company guarantees that they will pay you a certain amount of money for the rest of your life. There are other options, but that's the most popular. That's the one they certainly sell the most. They hype it the most. Well, what these people do, folks, they're insurance companies, not stupid, is they just turn around, take your money, and they either invest it in bonds or they invest it in bonds and stocks. Sometimes a little bit of real estate, but normally just bonds and stocks. And you'll notice that fixed annuities that pay 2-6% mostly invest in bonds, and variable annuities that pay 2-8% mostly invest in stocks. Wait a minute. We saw that bonds over the long term give us 4-8%, and stocks over the long term give us 8-10%. Why is the annuity paying us so much less? Well, why do you think? They want to make a profit. And they certainly don't want to pay more out than they're getting. So they make sure that these annuities are paying less than if you simply invested it yourself. Now, they are assuming the risk that you would have to assume if you did not invest with them, the risk of you outliving your income. But they're not stupid. They know how long you're going to live. They have actuaries, statisticians, who are very good at predicting the future. And so they price these things accordingly. What they are essentially saying, here's how I look at it, and I know the insurance, remember, I'm an insurance agent. The insurance agents really hate it when I say this. But what they're saying is, don't gamble with your money. You may get mediocre returns. You may do a whole lot better. You probably will, as long as you're prudent and don't panic. But if you get mediocre returns, oh, horrible. Instead, give your money to us. We will guarantee that you get mediocre returns. And we will get rich doing it. And that is the deal that they're making with you. They don't say that, of course. But that's how I understand it. And I've talked with other agents, and the ones who are honest will agree with me. Most of them won't. Most of them say, what are you talking about? This is the best thing that you could... Yeah, and what are your commissions? They're outrageous! On the website, in the face-to-face class now, we would go to the class website and we would click on some of the links that talk about annuities, and you'll see that the commissions are enormous. They give away free Caribbean cruises to the salespeople. That's how profitable for the life insurance companies these things are, folks. So, Bohica. Keep your back to the wall, your head down low. Sure, there may be one or two annuities out there that prove the exception to the rule. They're the exception to the rule. But for the most part, these things are horrible. In fact, one insurance agent who I trust and has, I think, the utmost in integrity, says it this way. He tells his clients, look, these things are like cigarettes, folks. They're not good for you. But if you really want to buy them, I'll sell them to you. Okay? I think that's a pretty good description. You know, they're really not good for your financial health. Remember, you're giving your money away to the insurance company. And if you live 6 months, oh well, they get to keep the rest. Now, if you live 60 years, oh well, you know. But one of the things they normally don't have is some of them do. They don't have a way to keep pace with inflation. So that amount that you're going to get every month now may look very healthy, but 20 years from now, it won't be, because inflation doesn't retire just because you do. So have I bad-mouthed annuities enough? I hope so. The next category, which is bold, which means it's one of the alternatives that you should consider, is real estate. However, as we will discuss when we get to the chapter on real estate, it's not for everyone, folks. Most people are going to buy a home. Great, that'll be the real estate investment. Real estate is tricky. It is difficult to get in. It's not always easy to get out. You got to deal with maintenance. You got to deal with tenants. Everybody's got their hand out. Oh, yeah. But real estate gives us two wonderful things. Capital gains, which means we bought the property for X and now it's selling for X plus Y or whatever. It's gone up in value. It can go down. It sometimes does. Look at the Great Recession. But it also gives us rent. And rent is one of those things, depending on where you live, that tends to keep pace with inflation. In some places, like San Diego, it's gone higher than inflation. So rent, real estate is a bona fide, meaning a real alternative for people, but it's not for everyone, and it's not for the faint of heart. You can and you will lose money at times, especially when the renter just decides to stop paying and then decides to destroy the place, and then you have to call the marshals, and it takes months, and you have to go through the process. Oh, it's no fun. It's no fun. And we'll discuss that later on. Okay. But think about it, folks. Notice that the long-term returns from rent actually are from real estate, are lower from stocks, aren't they? Well, you see, now wait a minute. The real estate agents, the real estate investors are jumping up and down saying, but you're not comparing apples to apples, and they are right. It turns out that the way we invest in real estate typically gives us a much better return than 7% a year. And we will discuss that in detail when we get to the chapter on real estate. Real estate, especially places like San Diego, has done far better than 7 to 8%. So, think about it. Other investment alternatives that I hope you will avoid, unless you know exactly what you're doing, or you are willing to lose a good chunk of your money, or preferably both, are derivatives, options, futures, hard assets, gold, precious metals, jewels, diamonds, art, collectibles. You know, folks, these things, they're normally not very good investments, especially for the vast majority of us. You may enjoy collecting Beanie Babies or comic books or whatever, and you may do well with it, but don't count on it as your retirement investment. Starting a business, we'll discuss that, and of course that's a whole world unto itself, but you young folks might think about that. But for the most part, these other investment alternatives, which we'll discuss in the chapter on real estate and other investment alternatives are not for the vast majority of individuals. So, slide number 14. What is your choice? If the goal is retirement, for example, if the goal is long-term, example, retirement, which is by definition long-term, unless you're as old as I am, then my choice is high-quality stocks. Huh? Although some people prefer bonds because they want to sleep well as opposed to eating well. And bonds are less risky than stocks, or a combination of both, right? Because do you want to eat well? That's stocks. Do you want to sleep well? That's bonds. If the goal is intermediate term, 2 to 3 or 4 years, then bonds or REITs, real estate investment trusts. What are those? We'll discuss those later on when we get to real estate and other investment choices. It's a great way to invest in real estate and not have to be a landlord. If the goal is short-term, you have no choice but to use a guaranteed short-term cash investment such as a money market account or a savings account or a CD. Although there are ways to use bonds if they're close to maturity, but business 123. The others never make sense except for a small percentage of the population. Really, folks, they really don't. So we want to stick, for the vast majority of us, stocks, bonds, and for a few of us, we want to go into real estate for the long term. Slide 15. Great. I'm buying stocks and bonds. How do I get started? Well, actually, you don't buy the stocks and bonds, that is. For the vast majority of people, the best investments are mutual funds that buy the stocks and bonds for them. You get two wonderful things, and I want you to burn these in the back of your eyelids because I'm going to ask you several times, and we're going to come back to this in chapters 12 and 13. You get professional money management and diversification. Instantly. Somebody else is managing the money on your behalf, and your $50 gives you 200 stocks. 25 cents of Apple and 50 cents of IBM. Aw, but you got me all excited about buying stocks and bonds all by myself, huh? Besides, in their commercials on TV, Ameritrade and Scottrade show everyday hardworking Americans just like me happily and profitably buying and selling stocks all the time. Slide 16. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you have the discipline, courage, and brains to buy when everyone else is selling and sell when everyone else is buying? What does that mean? It means when the market is tanking, that's the time you should be buying. When everybody else is running that way, you want to run this away. But we're not wired to do that. We are human beings. We are social animals. When we see a bunch of people run one way, what do? We follow them. Why? Because 100,000 years ago, if you saw a bunch of people running that way and you didn't run with them, you're the one who got eaten by a tiger and you didn't get to pass on your genes. So it's in our DNA. We do it because we're humans. In the financial world, that will kill you. You will not get eaten by a tiger. You'll get eaten by the markets. You'll get eaten by the sharks who know exactly how people act and wait for those times for people to panic. Do you have a strong background in finance, business, marketing, economics, politics, and history? Are you part of a global research team stationed all around the world? Because the world is global. You think Coca-Cola is a United States company. They make 80% of their money outside the United States. Sure, they're based in Atlanta. But if the entire United States just decided to stop drinking Coke, they'd still be a huge company. Do you have the time and resources to visit in person the companies you intend to invest in? Plus their customers, plus their competitors, plus their suppliers. Do you have enough money to buy at least 20 or more stocks representing various sectors of the economy? Because you're going to need healthcare, you're going to need energy, you're going to need consumer staples, plus technology. Most importantly, see, it's red and it's italic. See, that's really important. Do you have the knack or intuition for recognizing unrecognized value? Huh? What am I talking about here? I like to call it that sixth sense. Everybody sees this when they look at a company. But the good investors see, oh no, you don't understand, look at this. A great example is Walmart. Any idiot can buy the world's largest retailer now. It's called Walmart, and they are big, and yes, they are all around the world. The trick was to buy Walmart when it was not the world's largest retailer. 40 years ago, who was the world's largest retailer? Now, you millennials, you don't believe me. But 40 years ago, the world's largest retailer was Kmart. Yeah. And what did Walmart do that was so different than all the others? Than the JCPenney's and the Montgomery Ward's, they're gone. Macy's, the May Company, they're gone. What did they do differently? Well, the guy who started Walmart is from the rural areas of the country. And what he did is he built these huge stores in the middle of nowhere. Bentonville, Arkansas, and St. George, Utah. And the other retailer companies looking like, what are you don't build something that big out there. What's the matter with you? And of course, people who lived in the urban areas, they thought these guys are nuts. But no, if you live in the rural areas, you don't think twice about driving 2 hours to go shopping. Do we get up on I-5 and go up to L.A. to shop for the weekend? No, it doesn't work that way. We have plenty of options here. But for people in whatever, some minuscule town somewhere in East Wyoming or whatever, wherever, that's what you do. Plus, you go to the Walmart, the big 400,000 square foot facility, and you see friends of yours from other parts of the state because there's just not as many people there, so your friends are scattered around the state, around the area. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But did we, folks living in the urban areas, did we figure that out? No. Did I buy Walmart for 30, 40 years ago? What? No. I was sitting there scratching my head. And it was only a matter of time before, exactly, they had that base and then they came into the urban areas. Investing is simple, but it ain't easy. Slide 17, your results. If the answer to two or more of the previous questions is no, especially those last two, money for 20 or more stocks and that intuitive eye for value, then my advice to your students is to stay away from individual stocks. They will eat you alive. Bonds are also difficult since bond traders usually deal in tens of thousands of dollars per trade. There are exceptions. Government bonds, you can buy $1,000 worth of bonds at a time and you won't get skinned alive for the price. Mutual funds are your best bet. And if it means anything to you, dear students, virtually all of my family's financial investments and my clients and my mother-in-law's and my mother's when they were alive are in mutual funds. I certainly can't answer yes to all those questions. I didn't buy Walmart 30, 40 years ago. Here is a graphic. Now, you notice I'm not very artistically inclined. And I want you to be proud of me because I made this. I'm great with that, you know, stick figure with that round. Anyway, here we are, folks. Here we are. We're the little people. And more of them are women. And we give our money to the people in the top hats. $50, $100 a month, right? Whatever we can afford. And more of them are women. Now, why are more and more investors and more the mutual fund managers, why are they women? Well, I'll tell you why. Because women are getting smart, folks. It's about time they wised up and they realize, I'm not letting the husband of the house, my boyfriend or whomever, I'm not letting him take care of the finance. I saw what happened with Abuelito and Abuelita. He always told his wife, don't worry, little lady, I'll take care of everything. And he was an imbecile when it came to finances. And then he died, leaving her with nothing. And so the younger women are saying, oh, no, no, not me. I'm taking care of myself. Sure, if I find a man, it's great, but I'm taking care of myself. And it turns out that women in the investment world are better investors. It's already been statistically shown. Now, I'll leave it to you to hypothesize why. But so we're lucky that we see more and more women getting into the business. And why are these people at the top hats? Because they get paid very well, folks. And they are the ones that take the billions of dollars, because there's millions of people giving billions of dollars to these mutual funds, and they create a pool of money. And as I know, it looks like a potato, I apologize. But it's supposed to be a pool of money, and that's why it's called a mutual fund. The legal term is much better, in my humble opinion, but you will not hear it. It is an investment company. See? This is their job. You want a car, you go to a car company. You want shoes, you go to a shoe company. You want pizza, go to a pizza company. You want investments, go to an investment company. Don't go to an insurance company. Go to an insurance company for insurance. And what do? Well, the people in the top hats, they go out and they research which stocks to buy. They research which bonds to buy or which cash instruments. And they have billions of dollars, so they don't just buy 5 or 10 stocks or bonds. They buy 200 or 300 or more. So if one company goes Kmart or Enron or Kodak and becomes either worthless or pretty darn close, then your entire portfolio is just hurt just a little bit. You understand? That's the idea behind a mutual fund. And what we see is just the beginnings of the differentiation of mutual funds, because there are an awful lot of these things out there, folks. You see? Doesn't it make you feel great, huh? I think so, because here are people whose job it is to go out and invest on my behalf. I'm not going to build my own car. I'm not going to make my own shoes. You may decide after taking Business 123 to make your own investments, but the vast majority of people won't. So slide number 19. Okay, Payano, how do I pick a mutual fund, right? Well, that's tricky. Once you pick the mutual fund, it's pretty straightforward. But before you pick it, you have to do some serious research, and we will discuss that in detail when we get to chapter 13. But here are my advice for what it's worth, and we'll go over it again in chapter 13, so relax. You pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks or bonds. Quality is hard to describe, isn't it? But, quality is in the eye of beholders. But you want to look for quality. Is well-diversified across several industries, sectors of the economy, countries of the world. You want diversification. Diversification is good. It limits your upside, but more importantly, it limits your downside. You'll talk to people and say, well, I only want to have 10 stocks. That way I can make a whole lot of money. And they can lose a whole lot of money, too, if just one company does poorly. You want a mutual fund that has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, in my humble opinion, a management team with many years of experience. Avoid companies that shuffle their managers every few years, which used to be virtually all of them. They are changing their ways. They are realizing that that's not the best way of running a mutual fund. So that's fewer and fewer, but still a lot of them do. And it's been around for decades, and it performed consistently well in both good times and bad times, folks. I hate it when people say, look how well we did in good times. I ain't interested. I want to see how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device. Because it's going to. History of capitalism is a history of booms and busts and booms and busts. And if you think the future is going to be any different, I think you're wrong. I think we're going to muddle along as we have for the past 400 or 500 years of capitalism. About 400 years of capitalism. 100 years of serious capitalism. And we'll have good times and we'll have bad times. And so you want people who do well in both. In fact, I want people who do better in good times. In bad times. I want to see how well they do in bad times, because those are the times, Slide number 20. Okay, how do I purchase a mutual fund? Oh, relax. A little bit at a time. See, we come full circle. Remember, if a little money does not go out, great money does not come in. virtually all the mutual funds that you are interested will start with, will allow you to start with $25 or $50 a month, either through your employer, 401k, or from your checking account or savings account, Roth IRA, traditional IRA. There are some that want you to have at least $20,000 or $5,000 or $10,000. You don't even want those. Stay away from those. You want the ones that are at our middle of the road. You know, don't do anything risky. Just stocks are risky enough. Investing a fixed dollar amount, $50, $100 a month, periodically is called dollar cost averaging. Slide number 21. Now, this is a horrible name. I wish we could, in the industry, could come up with a better name because nobody can remember it. And if they can't remember it, they don't remember what the hell it means. It's simply putting away $50, $100 a month, more if you can afford it, into an investment. Typically a mutual fund, but it doesn't have to be a mutual fund. But it's typically a mutual fund because they're so easy, as we will discuss as we go through the next few chapters. With dollar cost averaging, see, when I first got married, my wife, she was terrified of stocks, and I don't blame her. So I would tell her, Anita, no matter what happens tomorrow, there's good news. The market's up! Good news! Yippee! Your $100 is now $100.20. Right? Your account is worth more. The market's down! Good news! Huh? How could the market be... Yes! Yes! When do you want to buy things at JCPenney's or Target? Or you want to buy them when they're on sale! And so next month, you're going to get more shares of the companies that you're buying at a lower price when that $50 or $100 comes out of your paycheck or checking account. You see? You don't have to worry about when the best time to invest in is. This month, when the $50 comes out of your paycheck or comes out of your checking account, that's the best time. And next month, it may be a little better, maybe a little bit worse, but it'll average out. That's why it's called dollar cost averaging. Slide 22. But now it sounds all so boring! When you got to this chapter, didn't you think, oh wow, I'm going to have 3 monitors and 4 computers and I'm going to be buying and selling and buying and selling. I'm going to forget it. you don't know what you're trying to get yourself into. And if you are interested in that, at the very least, take Business 123 so I can better arm you with information that will convince you otherwise. In the investment world, boring is good. After you have built a solid foundation of high-quality stock or bond investments through mutual funds, go ahead and play the market. Don't you just love that term, play the market? Yeah, it's like playing with dynamite. I used to call it my Vegas fund. At least I understood that I was playing with dynamite, and I kept that to a very small amount of my investments, folks. It was, you know, 1% or so of my total portfolio. Take no more than 5, maybe 10% of your financial assets. Choose your own stocks. Be prepared for volatility, right? That's the investment world's euphemism for large losses. You buy a stock for $12, specifically $11.88, and then you sell it for 30 cents. Do you know anybody who's done that? I do. I've known him all my life. He's kind of a goofy guy, teaches finance and investments at Southwestern. It was a great stock, folks. They were going to make artificial blood, and everything was going great. And yeah. Yes, luckily I kept my Vegas fund to no more than 1% of my wife and my total portfolio, and it's now no longer called the Vegas fund. It is now called the Benjamin Graham Fund. And if you don't know who Benjamin Graham is, you don't have to. He was the teacher of Warren Buffett. And he wrote the best book on investing called The Intelligent Investor. So, boring is good. Slide 23. What's coming up? What are the coming attractions? Well, we will next finish chapter 11 and our discussion of bonds. We'll concentrate on bonds, which is kind of unfortunate because I like to do bonds after stocks. That's how we do it in the Business 123 class, but we follow the book here. Then we'll concentrate on stocks. And stocks are a whole world unto themselves, folks. Bonds are boring. Stocks are exciting. Bonds are reliable. Stocks are risky. And in both chapters, we'll realize that we're not really going to buy the bonds. We're not really going to buy the stocks. Some people will. Some people will. But chapter 13, the investments for the masses are mutual funds. And we'll find that mutual funds make a lot of sense. They're not perfect. You're going to hear all kinds of criticisms about them. And we'll deal with those criticisms. We'll deal with the disadvantages of mutual funds. But on the whole, in my humble opinion, the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages. Then we'll spend a little bit of time, you know, not much, on real estate and the other investment alternatives. Because they are important. If, for only if, to know to stay away from them. We will then finish the class with Chapter 14, Retirement and Estate Planning. Cool? You ready? I'm excited because I just love investing. Slide 24. Let's do together, if you printed this out, you already know the answers. In the face-to-face class, we have the ABCD cards, and we list them up and see who gets the answers right, checking for comprehension. What are investment companies that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities, which is a fancy word for stocks and bonds? Investors get diversification and professional money management. Don't you know the answer to this? Mutual funds, right. Mutual fund is the popular term that you're going to hear on the television and news, and investment company is the legal term that you will never hear unless you happen to work in the industry. Slide 24. What are investments that represent ownership in a corporation? Investors receive, potentially, dividends and potentially capital gains or potentially capital losses. Real estate, stocks, bonds, short-term securities? Right, stocks. Stock investors are part owners of the corporation. You are an owner. Very cool. Slide 26. What are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, state and local governments and agencies, and the federal government? Investors receive a promise to pay interest and a promise to repay the loan, and in general they do. These are bonds. We say that bonds are fixed income investments, and we'll learn more about why in the next presentation, because we see that we know ahead of time what we're going to get, unless a bond defaults, which that's very unlikely, very unusual. Slide 27. What are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return? They are usually guaranteed or pretty darn close. There is a huge opportunity cost if you leave your money here for the long term. There's that phrase again, opportunity cost. And by the end of these chapters on investing, I certainly hope that you understand this a whole lot better than the vast majority of people. We'll see this as we go through. I hope so. So, what is this? Little risk, little return, short-term investment, short-term security, short-term instruments, short-term vehicles. You'll hear people use all those, but mostly what they'll say is cash. You got your money in the market? No, I'm in cash now. These are people who try to time the market and go in and out. Good luck to them. So, low risk, low return. But if you need your money in 6 months, right, where is it going to be? In one of these short-term investments. So, slide number 28. Now, you should memorize what the reasonable expectations of returns from the following investments. Realizing that the 80-100 year averages are a little out of whack now, okay? But try to remember these and realize that a couple of them are lower than what the average is over the last 100 years or so. So stocks, what can we reasonably expect from stocks? Well, unless the world falls apart, which is always a distinct possibility, we should expect 8, 9, 10%. Actually, some have done a whole lot better. Some have done a whole lot worse. So the variance is wide. And depending on which stocks you choose, you may do better or worse. Bonds, well, over the long term, they've given us 4 or 5 for municipal government bonds, 6%. 6-8% for corporations, but right now they're paying 2 or 3. And if you really get something wild, you might get 4, but that's really risky. So they're paying a lot less than they normally pay. And the same thing is true for short-term securities. Normally, we expect to get 2 to 5%. Now we're getting 0.2 or 0.02 or some outrageously low number. Real estate, if we have a long-term perspective, can deal with the properties, can deal with the tenants, we should do better than 7 to 8%. Especially if we live in an area that is desirable, such as San Diego. Mutual funds, well, it depends on which mutual fund you invest in, right? You invest in a mutual fund that returns stock, that invests in stocks, you should get the return of stocks, or pretty darn close. And bonds, similarly. If you invest in a money market mutual fund, you'll get very little. Those are the cash mutual funds. And the others, well, it's like minus something, right? We don't know, and often we lose. So, has this an overview of investments piqued your interest, or are you thoroughly muddled up? If you're in the second group, go back and listen to it again. Write down, make flashcards, make outlines. I'm not sure how you... I love flashcards and I love outlines, and that's how I normally do it. I don't use these highlighters. I don't know why people do. I guess they can read it over again and they see the highlighted area. But I never liked highlighters. I like to write something down. I'm more kinesthetic, they call us. I want to do something. I'm not as visual. And the flashcards, I look at them and I say it out loud. And so I'm also audio. That audio is very helpful. All right? Because you really should know this, folks. You're going to be the expert for your family and friends, right? And you should understand these so that if somebody says, well, what are stocks? You can tell them, you know, you're part owner of a corporation and you get potentially capital gains and dividends, but they're very risky. That's all you have to say. That's all you have to say. We'll learn more, but for now, just make sure you understand what's in this presentation and do your best to memorize it. Great. Now, our final presentation of Chapter 11 will have us concentrating on bonds. Boring, stodgy, reliable bonds. See you in our final presentations for Chapter 11.